Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Charming gentleman.
He is disoriented. Your world is unfamiliar to him.
He'll be comfortable soon enough. The arms of France are open to all.
I've heard otherwise.
What do you mean?
I understand there is opposition to our presence here among your citizens.
The resistance? In Paris, perhaps. But this is a small city, defenseless. We've learned to be a little more diplomatic. When this war is over, we want to remain on good terms with the victor.
Whoever that may be.
Whoever that may be.
Your city may be defenseless, but it's crucial to the war. Any ground assault into Germany must pass through this province. The resistance will come here.
If they do, I'll tell them what I tell everyone. Leave the war outside.
Hello, and welcome to everyone. We're all calm here. Everything's relaxed and chill.
Welcome to everyone?
Yes, welcome to everyone. I'm sending my welcome out.
It's an awkward way of putting it.
You're
to
welcome.
Everyone. Well, sometimes it's okay to be
it's
a little bit
welcome,
awkward. It
right.
catches the
No!
Ear.
Name!
Don't, okay, Dan, careful.
I gotta be careful about what I say.
Just it because, sounds like, a little suspicious.
You must be a little bit careful here, Dan. You don't want to give people the wrong
don't
idea.
Don't mention the war.
Well, don't mention the war.
Well, I mean, I have sounds from stuff, and sometimes I feel, even though the sounds aren't saying anything bad, it's just I feel bad about, like, saying anything from that terrible German person, that German Kapitan.
You mean the Heil Hitler? When they're heiling Hitler?
Does he actually say?
I think there's a Heil Hitler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't there a Heil Hitler in here somewhere?
Yeah.
We called it World War II.
The human dude.
Anyway.
That.
All right. I know we had to.
Well, there was
we
just the.
Im-
was it just the imagery? There was no imagery of it.
Well, there was plenty of swastikas.
Yes, there was
no,
plenty
he,
of imagery
he,
of it.
He stuck
but
his
no,
hand
I think,
up
he, I think he no, did a Heil he, Hitler. I think he did an Elon Musk move.
Pig.
Heilorama.
We're calm. We're relaxed.
Yes, of course.
We're ready to talk about.
Like,
Nazis.
Should I feel bad? Should I feel bad about playing this sound?
Yes, of course.
Let's
because
start
it's from
the beginning.
From a Nazi?
From Kapitan, the worst Nazi in the episode.
Kapitan?
Kapitan?
You mean the hologram Nazi?
The
one played
holograms?
By...
Holograms?
Are you
talking about the one?
Human Nazi.
In the
played by J. Paul Bamer?
Yeah, right.
And you know where we've seen J. Paul Bamer before?
He was on an Enterprise?
No. Well, yes, he was on an episode of Enterprise, the two-part Stormfront, where he also plays a Nazi. He plays the exact same basic character, except it's where they go back in time.
Old news.
Nazis.
We discussed...
Wait, are you talking about... Wait, is he the one...
The blonde fella.
Wait,
the
in the Enterprise
sexy
episode?
Nazi.
The Enterprise episode?
The sexy
the guy
yes.
that's not a Delta Quadrant gross face Nazi.
Is he the one that says...
Betty Grable.
Yes.
See that one? Because what's funny is also in this episode...
If Betty Grable came around that corner, what part of her would you be staring at?
And I argue that that's a terrible test because apparently Germans love...
Betty Grable.
Yeah. So he'd know the answer if he was a Nazi.
I,
so
I know I've heard that name, but does anybody really know who the hell Betty Grable was?
Well, anyway...
Someone she like in movies or something?
I think so.
Look, we're getting thrown off here.
And I'm just saying, like, that's a bad test to give Harry because, like... If he was a Nazi, he would have known the answer.
Anyway. Okay, look, Nazis are real popular
Harry
these days.
No
Nazis. Nazis are all the rage these days, and so we thought...
Seemingly so.
We thought last week we covered The City on the Edge of Forever, which was about dealing with Nazis, to at least tangentially. And so we thought, let's keep up the theme. Everyone's into Nazis these days. It's this whole thing. So let's continue.
He's turning into a Nazi.
Yeah, let's keep doing the whole Nazi thing, right? And so we thought the Killing Game. Let's do the Killing Game. So that's what we're doing this week. This Voyager's two-part, the Killing Game. Oh.
And what is our...
Oh, we are in episode 277 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Good evening, gentlemen.
So episode 277 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. Talk about...
Talk.
The Killing Game, both parts.
Welcome to Le Coeur de Lyon. I'm Catherine.
There is a lot to talk about because it is a two-part episode, a classic episode. I remember when this came on the air the first time.
Yes.
Particularly the vivid memory, not only of all the Nazi business, which was less popular at the time, by the way. Mm-hmm. Today, all the rage, this Nazi business. Back in 1998,
I am not
into Nazis. People were like, that's not cool. So you see that imagery and you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. This episode is going to be so crazy.
That was before
he is disoriented.
Yeah. So that's what
yeah. Oh, wait. I was saying Capitan, and you asked me why I was saying that because Chakotea has it. How do you pronounce it in German? Like
Chocolata.
It's spelled K A P I T A N. That's how they name the fellow in Chakotea.
Capitan.
That's how they name it in Chakotea. But in IMDb, I think they just say like German soldier.
SS soldier, I think, or something. SS officer.
Well, there's Deakins is the Herogen SS officer. And
that's different.
But in IMDb, yes, it says German SS officer.
Yeah, J. Paul Boehmer.
Yeah, Boehmer. Boehmer. Yeah.
So anyway, we have a lot to discuss.
Yeah.
So and we're getting less calm. We started out.
So I'm going to call him Capitan. So
cool it, guys. Cool
so
it.
I'm going to call him Capitan.
Everybody
so
just cool
Capitan.
It.
I figured before we get into the story, before we get into talking about the story of this episode, to provide some sort of philosophical context.
Even if I were persuaded,
I thought,
others wouldn't be.
Why don't you both let me know, what's your views on Nazis? Are you for them or against them?
I'm against them.
I mean... No, they suck, man. They're pretty shitty.
Yeah, man. Nazis.
Dan pondered it for a second.
No, because I felt like I felt like the against it. You know, Jesse said against it, so I had to show how much more against.
You want to be contrary?
Show how much more against Nazis I am than Jesse is. Yeah.
Oh,
all right.
So that's it's a competition. Who is less into
He's
Nazis?
He's trying to peg me as a sympathizer.
I'll peg you.
So all three of us.
You into pegging?
For better or worse, all three of us will reluctantly state that we are not into Nazis.
And me more so than Jesse. I am much more not into Nazis
Dan,
than Jesse is.
You were against Nazis in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
More vehemently opposed to the Nazis.
I'm no one's prey.
Jesse, you had to pause and think about it.
Jesse's still not keen on the Nazis. So take it or leave it. We're not trying to offend anybody out there. We know apparently there's just shitloads of Nazis all over the place now. So we hope you keep enjoying our show, even if you've now learned that we're not into Nazis.
If you happen to be one of those Nazis.
But which is why we enjoy Star Trek stories that make the point that Nazis are pieces of shit.
Go to hell!
And this two-part episode, it's not heavily focused on that, but it does, I think... do a good job of framing Nazis as problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So, that background being provided, let's go ahead and get started talking about The Killing Game.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with, we keep talking about the Nazi stuff, but this episode begins with a Klingon Janeway.
Yeah.
And that's hilarious and awesome. And Kate Mulgrew was also clearly having a real fun time being all Klingon in this crazy fight.
Yeah, crazy fight.
And Dan's presumably going to click a sound
clip.
This
happens every time.
Well,
man.
No, the thing is...
Like, every time.
Was it just some oomps and offs? Was there just nothing you've thought worth grabbing
from?
Here's,
she says
no,
something.
It was a short teaser.
Okay,
I will say
I'm
or opening scene. What do you call them, Dan?
Cold open.
Not just me, but they are called cold opens.
Okay, you call it a cold open. I call it an opening teaser.
I think of a teaser as like a trailer or something, or like
yeah, it's a teaser trailer. This is an opening teaser.
Or like if you're going at the end of the episode, you show a teaser for the next episode or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. No, what I was saying was that I recorded Janeway saying stuff in Klingon, but like I was contemplating whether I should label each one because I put the who spoke the line at the end. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think, should I also include what character they were saying it as themselves or the other? Because I kind of did that. I kind of did that in a Mirror episode where I was like Mirror Cisco, this Cisco, you know. But this one, I was just like, I can't. I just there's too much. I didn't do it, so it's hard for me to know exactly which ones.
I'm no one's prey.
No, I can't even remember. Was that a Janeway Klingon?
Was it?
It's a new game. Is it Klingon Janeway?
Yeah, I just watched this episode for the second time.
That definitely
not long
is.
Ago. It could be.
Yeah. Wait, this one.
You should have killed me when my back was turned.
I think that was a Janeway Klingon.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it was a fun little opening teaser. and really sets the stage for an interesting story, because you're like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
So after we come back from
I told you no more mistakes.
From the opening.
You've just made your last one.
I don't think that was Klingon Janeway. No. I guess I didn't record as many as I thought.
So we're introduced to the Hirogen, are using the holodeck.
Which they say the word Hirogen 47 times, and they say the holodeck 52 times.
Hologram?
They say holodeck 52 times, Hirogen 47.
Hologram.
And they say...
Holograms?
Only two times do they say holograms.
Really? Yes. Only two times? Holodeck... Did you record both of those times?
Holograms?
And these holograms are becoming annoying as well.
Holograms?
Confine your killing to holograms.
Hologram.
But they also say something. They say this.
Our holographic allies are losing ground.
Holograms?
And they also say this.
It's a holographic projection.
Holograms.
Do you have the holographic Americans? That was another line that jumped out at me when...
the only American line I have is this.
The Americans said thanks.
And you know what's really funny? Is this was in 1998... when the Germans were Nazis, and we're discussing it in 2025 when the Americans are Nazis.
Oh my gosh.
So, because when they said the holographic Americans are coming, I was like, oh no, they're going to kill us all. They're terrible people.
It's funny how things go big in a big circle. Yeah. Big circle like. Big.
That's not a circle.
Kapla!
I like how he goes, bleh, listen at the end.
Kapla!
Oh yeah, here's the line. The battle was concentrated here on Holodeck 1, but the fighting is spilled out on Decks 5 and 6, and it looks like a group of holographic Americans is invading Deck 7. I did not record
Kapla.
Harry saying that.
Kapla!
Kapla! Kapla, gentlemen! Kapla!
Great
Gams.
The Doctor had a limited role in this episode, but was golden every time he was on the screen. And him saying Kapla was hilarious.
Yeah, there was one scene where he like woke up, was it 7 of 9? He woke her up and he was like, it was like in her face.
Yeah.
It was really uncomfortable.
Trying to be all secretive. Yeah, well, you know, he's a close talker, that doctor.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of 7 of 9, when we get back, this is how we're introduced to...
You meant we were going to break.
No, we're not going to. We're barely into the podcast at all. Don't give the audience hope that we're going to
start at the beginning.
Yeah, when 7 of 9, she all shoots up when he wakes her up, and then suddenly his like, it's like, it's funny because you just see her face, and then when she shoots up, all of a sudden his face is like, it's like, it's kind of comical, and I imagine it would be kind of disorienting.
He is disoriented
to wake up to such a thing.
Well, so
maybe not if you're bored.
So
Kapla!
We know about the we know about the Klingon simulation, but we soon learn about the second simulation.
I'm tired of this simulation.
Where they're doing this whole Nazi business. Where
then you have no memory of the simulations in the holodeck?
The Hirogen are pretending to be Nazis who have occupied a small but strategically important French village.
And it's like that Carr really didn't do enough research about Nazis because he seemed totally offended by like Nazis in general. There was that whole line part where he's like gets all pissed off at Capitan. I don't know, what do you want to call this guy character?
The commandant?
Is he the commandant?
No, I mean, the commandant is the alpha Hirogen.
Okay, I'm calling him
the commandant.
Okay, Carr, I'm sorry, I didn't clarify. They don't say this in the episode or IMDb, but Carr
the blonde guy.
Carr is the alpha Hirogen.
Okay.
That's who Carr is. And I know they don't really mention that anywhere.
I did not know that that's his name.
It's only in Chakotay, so I can't even confirm that it's real, but it's usually pretty reliable.
He's the person who has the very interesting idea.
He's got an interesting
shifting his culture towards this holographic
and it's an interesting perspective in that, like, at first it's like, this guy's a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
And then by the end you're still like,
he's a Nazi.
Yeah. And by the end you're still like, well, this guy's still not that cool, but like he's got a reason for what he's doing. And it's not about like, because when he's talking to the German, let's just call him the German German officer guy.
The Nazi.
Banner. He's talking to the main Nazi. The Nazi. We'll just call him the Nazi.
The handsome, blonde-haired, square-jawed Nazi.
Oh man,
who talks with that? He makes his lip all flat, all like.
He doesn't understand.
That's how you know he's a Nazi, is when he's like,
had a baby with B'Elanna.
My upper lip is a little bit flat.
B'Elanna's on it.
She was on it.
She was on it indeed.
Roxanne Dawson was actually pregnant filming.
Right.
And
this was the only part of the season
that they
showed her.
Yeah.
Yeah, they only
pregnant. They had to hide. They had to do those clever pregnancy Heidi tricks.
Right, like on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Right. When he says, when he's talking to the German soldier and he goes, "You're superior to no one," he's giving him that whole speech about why he's a piece of shit.
Military insight of don't underestimate your enemy.
He says, don't underestimate your enemy. He's also like, you suck because, like, this is not a real challenge. Yeah. You already have an advantage over these people. All you're caring about is steal. You're just like bullies that are stealing their art. And he's like, you're superior to no one. So he's basically saying, you know, you suck. You're a piece of shit. German SS soldier, but he's like talking to all the Nazis. He's basically talking. It's like this alien didn't like study.
He got alien dressed as a Nazi, dressing down the Nazis.
Well, yeah, because it's like he like looked over their holodeck history, and like simulating the holodeck. And it's almost like he's learning what the Nazis are really about. The more he does
likes
it,
the Nazis,
because it seems
dude.
Like during that speech, he's actually offended. That it's like he didn't know. He's like, you motherfuckers are terrible. Fuck you guys. Dude. You know?
Not even the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, right. So even this guy, so it's like this guy.
At his friend too, at the other Hirogen guy who he's also trying to make the same point, being like, what? You're not paying attention to what the point of the hunt is. You're just like, oh, the hunt is cool. Let's hunt things. Yeah. That's what our culture does, is hunt things. And the older guy is like, the commandant guy, the Alpha Hirogen guy's whole point, which is very interesting, is no, the purpose of the hunt is not the hunt. The purpose of the hunt is to like learn more about ourselves and about the world and the universe.
Yeah, in the end, he wants a sim hunt, you know. And so
it's the future, baby.
So I thought it was a nice nuanced perspective that we're introduced to this guy. We think he's a total piece of shit, and then we find out he's like fuck. Even he is like, fuck these Nazis. But then even his soldier, who's kind of a dick, but probably even his Taranj or whatever, they didn't say this in the text, but there was one time at the end where the German soldier was giving his speech, and like even Taranj kind of had this look like, who is this fucking guy?
Yeah.
They didn't dive into that, so I don't know if that's what their intention was, but it kind of looked like it. But yeah, like you said, so he's like he's way better than the Nazis. He's totally different than the Nazis. But even to his own soldier, Taranj,
you're like, this guy is totally better than the Nazis.
I know.
It's like that's not like a fairly low bar.
Okay, well, considering where we started. But then he looks at Taranj, and like you said, Taranj may not he's not even as bad as a Nazi, but he kind of sucks too. He's got his own problems. He's still not as bad as Nazis, though.
Well, and in both cases,
are superior to no one.
He's trying to, the Alpha Hirogen is trying to convey the advice that was given by the second in command of the Foot Clan in the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Tetsuo.
When Tetsuo is sparring
Master Tetsuo
with one of the top recruits of the Foot Clan, and bows to him, and then the recruit bows, and then Tetsuo kicks him in the face and then runs over and says that wonderful line, never lower your eyes to an enemy.
Right.
Cool but rude.
Yeah, never underestimate.
Yeah, never lower your eyes to an enemy.
Never underestimate your prey or disrespect its abilities.
Yeah, I mean, Tetsuo maybe...
Is it some kind of like...
Didn't care about the latter part, but...
You said that you understood the importance of what we're doing here. Yeah. Never underestimate your prey or disrespect its abilities. Right. If you do, you will become the hunted.
Oh.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Good advice that nobody's paying attention to.
The hunter becomes the hunted.
And Janeway all caught him at that one part at the end when she was like saying, like, you underestimate me, you know? Because you saw it, and that lingered on his face. That's when he realized, like, oh.
I did.
This is a very well-written episode.
That's the point. That's one of the points. I guess the first point when they start realizing they're not simply prey is when they have to negotiate with him. They're like, oh shit, we gotta negotiate with a prey. And then when she says this shit about you underestimating him, he starts to see her more on an equal footing, I think. There's a few spots. So yeah, this actually episode is surprisingly Tetsuo was from Akira, I remember.
Oh yeah,
Tetsuo,
the Akira slide, the old Akira slide. You know what that is?
No, I don't.
I know what the electric
is. That
slide.
Yeah, is that a guy dance or something?
No, it's the motorcycle slide where it's that shot has been recreated in so many other movies.
Oh, is there
anime.
Actually a term for it?
It's called the Akira slide.
I didn't know that became its
Look
own thing.
Look it up on DuckDuckGo.
I am Reginald Smith.
DuckDuckGo. One of the few search engines not associated with Nazis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And shitheads and awful people. DuckDuckGo.
What about Dogpile? Is that... No, Dogpile's... No, that just puts them all together, doesn't it?
I'm not familiar with
that. No, DuckDuckGo. Yeah, that's the good one.
Yeah. That's the good one. I mean, for now, who knows? By the time this episode airs, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some guns.
Okay, so getting back to towards the beginning of the episode, we get introduced to this second Nazi, or the second hologram program that's focused on the Nazis.
Holograms?
And how we're introduced to it is a Casablanca-like club.
Yeah, but
in which Seven of Nine, Jerry Ryan, is singing She's the crooner. She's the holodeck crooner.
Black magic has me in its spell.
She's doing a nice job.
Yeah.
Jeri Ryan's got a great voice.
Yeah, she does. She really does. Like, at first when I was watching, I was like, it looks like that voice is coming out of that mouth.
Yeah.
You know, when you see people singing and you're like, that voice doesn't look like it's coming out of that mouth.
She can work it, yeah.
Dan, I can attest to the fact, having been to his house a number of times, Dan has a beautiful television. Actually, has two beautiful televisions.
We helped put it on that wall.
Very large televisions. And I'm now imagining Dan just with rapturous attention standing 2 inches from his 75, 80-inch TV, staring
squinting
at Jeri Ryan's mouth, being like, yeah. Yeah,
it's coming out of that mouth.
Those sounds are coming out of that mouth. But yeah, she's very talented.
Yeah. I think your TVs are as good as my TVs, Patrick. In fact, you have more TVs than
How
I
many
do.
TVs
do
y'all have?
I have more TVs than you, but I think your TVs are better than my TVs. I do have...
You have one on like every level, right?
A lot of TVs. I have children.
Multiple. Oh, children.
I have ADD, so I want to watch... you know, we're not yet at the thing where on one TV you can do the Back to the Future 2 thing where Marty McFly's son goes in and is like, channel 262, 73, 48, the food channel.
So let me put the whole thing in my mouth.
Wait, what? Oh, it's Jurassic Park. We decided we can't reference until episode 300.
Yeah, and I got the quote wrong. I even commented last week. I was like, I think I got that wrong. It's not Linux, it's Unix.
It's Unix, yeah.
Speaking of Unix, you have a Unix shirt.
I'm wearing a Unix shirt, and then Dan is referencing a comment last week where he was referencing Jurassic Park.
Yes, of course.
He was referencing the character of Lex.
Impossible.
From Jurassic Park, seeing some sort of bizarre 3D operating system,
and then concluding it's
Unix, and she's like, I know Unix because, whatever. Anyway.
Gung-ho.
I'm breaking my own rule, because at the time I suggested that we stick to the Pulp Fiction, Spaceballs, and Back to the Future references.
A bit of Reservoir Dogs.
Until episode 300, then we'll get rid of the Pulp Fiction, Spaceballs, and Back to the Future references, and then we'll shift to Jurassic Park, and we've left some slots open for other movies.
This is madness.
Surf Ninjas? Should we reference Surf Ninjas?
I've never seen that movie.
I've never seen it either, but...
Tammy and the T-Rex?
I don't know what that is. How about But I'm a Cheerleader? That's a good movie.
Yeah. That's not really quotable.
I don't know. It's pretty quotable. I'm not remembering any quotes except for the title, But I'm a Cheerleader. Great movie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's great. I thought it was pretty good.
All right. Don't listen to Dan, folks. But I'm a Cheerleader is a fantastic movie.
I think it's good. I think it's
quite,
good.
Go check it out.
Nice. I think it's good. There are some extremely touching scenes in that movie. I'm being
Has
completely
RuPaul
serious.
In it?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious when I say there are some extremely touching scenes in that movie. I think as a whole, there's a couple issues.
What about Ghost World? Do you like Ghost World?
I don't think I've ever seen Ghost
World. Ghost World's great.
You never seen that one?
Right. No, I don't know. I don't think I've
Scarlett Johansson, Thora Birch.
Thora Birch.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Ghost World, based off of a graphic novel.
No, I never did see that. I guess I should.
You ought.
Is it drama? Is it sci-fi? Is it a mystery?
It's indie, interesting weirdness from the late 90s.
It's based off a graphic novel. It's like a... You know,
it's that late 90s, surreal. Early 2000s, you know, when you got a lot of those fun
indie
movies.
Yeah.
Inconceivable.
Indeed. All right, so.
It should prove
it's a
stimulating.
It's got Steve Buscemi.
Jeri Ryan's crooning. Kate Mulgrew is Casablancaing and running the nightclub.
Yeah.
And being friendly to the Nazis as a mechanism for advancing the resistance, of which she is the local leader.
You leave the war outside. You leave the war outside. Leave the war outside.
Thank you, Dan, because I was like, Dan's got to be recording every single time she says, leave the war outside.
Leave the war outside.
Leave the war outside.
You leave the war outside.
Leave the war outside.
But leave the
coffee. I'm Reginald Smith.
Leave the coffee in here.
Reginald
Smith. Reginald
Smith. I'm Reginald Smith.
All right.
We are German.
We are German!
Tomog!
Okay.
Interestingly enough, the closed captioning spell that T-O-H-M-A-A-G, but the Chakotay spells it K-T-O-H.
The
M-A-A-G.
The captioning was really funny when the Klingons were like chanting. It was like, I'd never seen the Klingon on the captions before.
Oh, yeah. Wait,
I never noticed.
Were you talking about when they went like
da da
So we rag on Neelix a lot, and with good reason, I think, with justifiable reasons.
He's a space creep.
But we also always try to stress that we're not ragging on Ethan Phillips. Ethan Phillips is fantastic.
Yeah, that was a good.
He brings a lot to the role of Neelix. And this is
one
of those
Klingon turn. Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those examples where Ethan
Phillips. It's really good.
All the actors that get to play the multiple roles are having fun, but they have different challenges and different opportunities. And Ethan Phillips getting to play both the actual, he thinks he's a Klingon Neelix, and the, oh fuck, I've regained consciousness, but I have to pretend I'm a Klingon Neelix. Both of those were brilliant. And it was,
I may be drunk, but I can still send your soul to the next world and leave your body here to rot.
I think it's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's a great opportunity to not hate Neelix for once, because so often he's an aggravating or indeed problematic and upsetting
creep.
Character. Yeah, space creep supreme.
And then, so yeah, not only is it Neelix as a Klingon, but Neelix as Neelix, but Neelix as Neelix trying to pretend to be a Klingon.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And again, he's not, he's pivotal to this story, but he's also, we kind of just occasionally come back to him, right? They just have to keep reminding us that Neelix is hanging out on the holodeck as a Klingon. But of course, we first see him in the role as a resistance bicyclist baker man.
Right. This is him
getting
as
harassed by Nazis.
So this is a Klingon. This is Klingon pretending to be human.
You will listen.
That's him. That's, you can tell it's Neelix being
Neelix is,
but
like,
then, but then, yeah,
Guten Tag.
That's him. That's catching up to where we are now.
Guten Tag.
He's like, he becomes less creepy when Kes is not around it.
Yes.
Because there's just not that situation of creepiness.
And this is the fourth season where Kes left at the beginning of the fourth season.
Yeah, right. You get 7 of 9 and Kes leaves.
And it did give Neelix an opportunity to grow as a character, particularly grow away from the guy in his 40s dating a 2-year-old.
I can't complete the assignment without it.
Non sequitur.
That wasn't. He can't complete without. He can't complete without Kes.
Can't complete the assignment.
Yeah, without. He can't do it without Kes.
Stretch.
I don't know.
It's a stretch.
I'm no one's prey.
That's what Kes is saying. Kes is saying, "I'm not. I'm not your prey."
Yeah.
Pervert Neelix.
I don't think they ever did it.
And Neelix is like,
"I am not well."
That's what Neelix says.
Well, Neelix is harassed by Nazis.
And you know what the thing is? Is
that's
that,
a fucked up scene.
And murdered.
Well, and it's fucked up because so we're led to believe that the Nazis were fucked up. Okay, this is not me. I'm walking into a bad place here with this way the sentence started.
All right, so what happened just now is Dan tensed up and both Jesse and I relaxed and leaned back. We don't have to do anything for the next couple minutes.
Okay.
Dan walks his way, digs his way out of this hole.
Okay. All I'm saying is that, like, they seem like...
They built good roads.
No,
You ever heard of the Autobahn?
Okay.
Trains ran on
We were led to believe that these soldiers were unreasonable for busting up his wine and breaking his bread, which they were, but at the same time, he was carrying a message that he did sneak by him. And in fact, one could say they didn't go far enough. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that I would have done it.
They could have kept searching.
That's what I'm saying.
That was a weak effort.
Because, well, I'm saying, and it makes him look like a dick. It's like, oh, he's harassing this person, breaking their bread and breaking their wine. But if they wanted to find their shit, like, it's like they should have done more. Now, the part that
they were
dicks in the end, though, is because they shouldn't have been wanting to fuck with them in the first place. But I'm saying, if they're trying to get information, like, it's reasonable that they would do what they did.
Although, you're right.
But there was a bullshit, but they just broke the bread in half. They should have served
because
more.
I think what we're supposed to understand, or at least this is how I took it.
Logic is irrelevant.
Is that when you're dealing, right, with these sort of fascist bullies, these assholes, that they are using the context of trying to suss out spies to actually just harass people that they don't even think are spies necessarily.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have enough information to know whether they were targeting Neelix because there was already a rumor that he was a spy or working for the resistance.
Yeah, so
that's plausible, but I like to think that they were just being shitheads.
You know, I take it back. You guys are right. Like, if they had searched harder, they would have been less dickish, yes, because that you could tell they were just worried about finding something. But in this case, it's very obvious that they were just trying to find.
And it was particularly the Hirogen guy, because even the Nazi guy next to him didn't really say much. And he's just
bullseye.
He wasn't, you know, he clearly was like perfectly fine with what was going on. Although he did give him a bit of a side eye, like when the guy was like, if it were up to me, you'd already be dead. The Nazi was kind of like, ooh, this is like,
if the choice were mine, you would already be dead.
That's a little extra Nazi. Oh, by the way,
that's actually Taranj said that.
By the way, that fella.
I'm just saying that Taranj said that line.
Yeah, I know.
That's the Hirogen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The human Nazi holodeck Nazi standing next to Hirogen was the one who was like, whoa.
Oh, okay, I got you.
It was like when I'm saying actual Nazi, I'm saying like the holodeck Nazi as opposed to the Hirogen in disguise as a Nazi.
Okay.
I will spare your life for now.
But yeah, that Hirogen was played by. What was that? Metcalf? The guy who played Niedermeyer in
oh, that
Max McDougal.
Metcalf was the medic.
Oh, you're right. He was the medic.
Max McDougal's.
He was the maestro in Seinfeld.
That's right. The Hirogen medic was Matt Metcalf, who played Niedermeyer in Animal House.
Yeah.
And Niedermeyer was also
not
like
Ned
a Nazi.
Niedermeyer.
Ned Niedermeyer in Animal House.
No. Ned Niedermeyer.
No, that's Groundhog's Ned. That's not Niedermeyer.
Yeah, that's Ned Niedermeyer.
No. That's Ned the Head. Needle Nose Ned. Ned Ryerson.
Oh, Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson. Niedermeyer is in Animal House, and he plays a fascist asshole in Animal House, too.
No.
But in this place, he plays the medic.
Also a vampire in Buffy.
Yeah. It is a different guy who plays Tangerine. What's his name? Because I never knew his name. I just knew him as like asshole Hirogen. Like extra sort of.
Taranj?
Taranj.
Yeah, Taranj. Taranj.
Fuck, man. We got to take a break. Okay, I forgot. I got so wrapped up in that thing. We're too calm.
Oh, my gosh.
We got to take a break. All right. So, sorry about that. We calmed down a little bit too much. We'll try to amp things up when we come back from the break, which will be.
Something wrong?
In just a moment. Be right back.
Au revoir.
Podcast. All right, we're back.
We leave in 1 hour.
It's funny because it's true.
Is it? Oh yeah, we have about.
We leave in 1 hour.
Yeah, that's true. It's, Dan's been
if you're
waiting
lucky
for that. Very clever.
Tally ho.
my second favorite line, or maybe my first favorite line of the whole episode. Tally ho, because he waves his little Klingon knife around.
Right. Yeah, his cute little Klingon knife. You and your cute little Klingon knife.
Because he got handed the knife somebody. And he like holds it all delicately.
I didn't know where to start first. I was going to mention briefly.
Start at the beginning, sir.
Okay. Well, these are kind of.
Not all the way at the beginning siblings. Because we're one third of the way into the podcast. So, how about start about one third of the way into the episode?
So when Reginald Smith
it's
is. Okay, when Reginald Smith is all talking, right? You remember Reginald Smith?
Hell yeah,
is
dude.
That Tom?
I'm Reginald Smith.
The weather guy.
Yeah, the weather code guy. By the way, they were able to copy that code and decipher it super quick.
B'Elanna's like, on it, baby.
Yeah, she's on it to the max, man.
B'Elanna's on it.
Like they fucking wrote it out and decoded it as it was happening. There's no way you're going to be able to write. Because they were like, it's every third vowel and fifth consonant or whatever, but it's like, how are you supposed to do that as fast? Anyway,
yeah, we'll just
I'll just pretend they're good at it. But then Reginald Smith goes, this report will repeat in, and she's like, 45 seconds. And then he goes, 45 seconds. And then she goes, here's the English precision. Was that a joke about like German precision?
I was wondering about that too. Know. I think that they actually were saying, yes, precision. It is English precision when it comes to the code.
I'm not
code
saying,
stuff.
Yeah, I'm not saying English, the English aren't precise.
They cracked the code.
Well, no, I get what you're saying, Dan. Yeah. It's a little confusing because we usually associate stereotypes of precision with the Germans or the Swiss.
We are Germans.
Maybe the Swiss, but really the Germans or the Swiss. And now here they're mentioning the English. Now when it comes to trains running on time, the English, the stereotype is that they do not run on time.
The purity of German blood.
And when it comes to...
Sorry, that was one of the ones I was like, I don't know about that one.
But
I just like,
really
play that again.
I just like the way he says it.
The purity of German blood.
Do you think that he says it in such an impressive way? The purity of German blood.
The purity of German blood.
Purity of German blood. Like why don't you give it a try?
The purity of German blood.
Yeah, but can you do it with a little, can you do a little German, like a little bit of a German accent on it? The purity.
I think I would just make a fool of myself.
German blood.
I can't, after you've done it, mister, I know German and been around German-speaking people, like, you do it much better than me, so it'll just sound silly. And it might even be embarrassing for both of us.
Embarrassing? Do you think it'd be offensive?
I think it would be embarrassing for all three of us, plus the audience.
Jesse, what do you think?
I don't think it's embarrassing
for
Jesse because he doesn't look like he doesn't really care. I think he doesn't care how I speak. He just likes to look at me and laugh.
No, I am sympathetic to what Dan is saying.
No, I'm just saying
I don't think I would be able to say it either.
Yeah. I don't think you would be embarrassed for me. I think you would laugh because you like to laugh at my miss. Because you like the Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude?
The Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude.
Yes, of course.
Taking joy in the pain of others?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Tally-ho.
Schadenfreude.
Kapla.
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 Kapla, gentlemen. Kapla.
Purity. A purity of German blood.
Okay, my next one I was going to say, this is an actual, maybe a little longer, although that conversation went on longer than I expected.
Which conversation?
The one we had about the German, the English.
Purity of German blood.
We were talking about the English precision, and it went to German blood, and then it went to Schadenfreude. Yeah. But okay, this definitely shows some parallels with that whole DS9.
That's an episode of TNG.
What?
Parallels?
Okay. With the
got Jesse to laugh.
You will listen.
It was worth it. I did not mean to. I apologize because I don't like interrupting you, Dan.
Listen to me.
Never. He never likes.
But if there's a chance, I can slurp down one of those Jesse laughs.
Remain calm and stay quiet.
I gotta take it. Laughs come easily to me and Dan, but Jesse reserves them.
And boy, do they come out when they come out.
Okay. So, second thing, you gave us the first thing about the English people and the purity of German blood.
Second verse, not same as the first.
Second verse, different than the first?
No!
Bloodhound gang?
I was going to say, this draws parallels to the DS9 whole situation between the Hunters and the Tosk.
Ah!
Except
Tosk.
And except this is more like, I always got the impression, that, and they never state this, but the Hunters always seem like they're more on the move, although I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah.
This just seems more like sort of like a colonial version of like...
You mean the Hirogen?
The
Hirogen. More...
Like they're more to do it to like build their society, to colonize their universe.
Although
and shit like
he
that.
Does make the point that they don't seem, they're spreading themselves too thin.
That's true.
That's one of Alvin Hirogen's arguments, is that they're kind of not doing
so,
that anymore.
Well, so that's how they were. They were like, but we never really find out much about the Hunters. We don't even know their name. We just know them as the Hunters.
Yeah.
So
they have really small spaceships.
I thought you were going to say something else.
You're like, they only hunt because they got small painters.
I mean, ships are smaller than Voyager, and Voyager isn't the super biggest ship.
I noticed
ever.
That, but they had four of them, so. But
well, the Hunters got to be all spry. The Hirogen, they got to have spry little ships that dart around.
Yeah.
I mean, they're modeled off of the Predator. I mean, let's not beat around the bush here.
Totally.
This is not the first episode the Hirogen appeared in.
So how would you guys say that the Hirogen are different from the Hunters then? I assert that it seems like the Hirogen have a more defined structure of why they are doing what they're doing, where the Hunters are just kind of like a plot device.
Precisely.
Like,
no, the Hirogen are much more fleshed out.
And it's actually, it's not a plot device. They're actually the subject of the story.
And it's also presented, as you've described, Dan, as a sort of an interesting moral quandary about this is their culture and they're at a crossroads, for lack of a less ridiculous and cliched analogy.
One could argue that's like would be even like an animal rights episode or something like that, because like the humans are the prey and the Hirogen look at the humans
angle I hadn't considered.
Yeah, they're sort of superior to they're hunting it for sport and to grow their culture.
Like animals,
Hirogen blood.
And at one point he's like, when she says you underestimate me, that was right before he said that was right before underestimate. You may be under. No, you underestimate us. Right. And he's like, yes, perhaps I do. Before that, he says.
Sorry.
No, just, you're allowed.
I just can't get over the whole. Underestimate.
That's vamping. Like,
no,
that's
like, not vamping.
That's like vamping like a pro.
That is quite
call
the opposite.
Me a, call me a vampist. Vamping. Call me a vampist. Call me.
You're a vampist, Dan.
Call me Vampula. Vampula, because I'm a vampist.
We've explained previously that we're uncomfortable with the tone of the term vampist. Jesse and I have spoken to you about this offline, and you keep bringing it up.
You got a problem with that, sister?
Sister.
Before that, he says, I don't expect you to understand. You are prey. So from the start, he's just assuming they're these sort of like, they don't really have sentience, or sentience, as some people say. I say sentience.
I've heard that you've got to pray just to make it today.
Yeah, it's true. Hammer said it best, you know? It's true. And you can't touch this, no matter how much you want to. You can't touch this.
What is it that you couldn't touch in MC Hammer's
this.
famous song.
He was, it's
those
it,
pants.
It's what was too legit to quit. Was what you can't touch.
Yeah, but I mean,
because this is how we do it.
It was those pants.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, so Jesse's taking sort of a literal interpretation, as in you can't touch the pants. I've heard people say he's saying you can't touch the penis.
No.
Probably the more common interpretation is the this that MC Hammer is referring to is that sort of difficult to define ephemeral quality that he brings as a person. The total sum of his personality, his life experience, is something that you, despite trying as hard as you might, cannot touch.
Oh, this human is full of words.
It's possible. You could be onto something there.
I mean, that's certainly not something I came up with on my own. I think it's the most common interpretation.
Hammer, don't hurt them.
Please, Hammer, please, don't hurt them.
Please, Hammer, don't hurt them.
Don't hurt them. This is not how we do it.
All right.
One could argue that there's that, although who knows if anyone really had that in mind when they wrote the episode, but it does, they do treat us like we maybe could argue that humans treat animals, so I don't know.
I think it's an interesting angle.
Yeah, interesting angle.
At the very least, you can hang it on your bulkhead.
I think it's an excellent story.
Yeah, good.
You
cool
tell it so well.
Oh, cool story, bro.
That's
do people
from,
still say
line
cool?
From Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I know. Dude, people still say cool story, bro. No, they don't say that anymore, do they?
Perhaps ironically. I mean, even if they would say it ironically, it's not that cool.
No.
They've really been like whooping on Harry Kim, man. He's beat.
Yeah. Up,
man.
Harry Kim was pretty awesome.
They were socking him around. He was taking it, though.
Well, he was being pretty petulant that whole time, you know?
Well, yeah.
Well, he knew he had to be. You got to be petulant with Nazis, Dan.
Yeah, that's true.
I know that you...
Those are bad news.
You might hold them in higher esteem than some of us, but...
Go to hell!
but you got to be petulant with Nazis. I mean, there's other things you can be with Nazis as well. But petulant, it's a good start.
You wanted a war? Looks like you've got one.
But I dug Harry in this episode, and I like that they gave him a lot to do. He's like running around this ship being all harried. He's like trying to do a resistance and dealing with the Herogen. Getting dirtier and dirtier. His hair's all mussed up.
Yeah.
What did he told that dude? He said, like, go up and do the thing, and if they ask you why you have it, say, I can't complete. Oh, I played that earlier, actually. Yeah. That was when you accused me of being a non sequitur when I played this.
I can't complete the assignment without it.
Anyway, he said that to the guy, right?
Right.
And there was no point for him to say that because the guy never used that line.
They never gave him any problems.
Yeah, they didn't give
him
exactly.
They were just like, okay, go to the bridge.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he was just, you know, it's good to be prepared.
I guess it just gives us texture or something.
You gotta cover all the bases.
Even though one of those bases didn't happen. Texture.
It was giving the audience a...
You don't want to be too on the nose because then you'll be like, we know what's happening, you know, so...
I think it's good writing in the sense that...
I know what's happening.
You know the audience might say, why would the Herogen be so lame as to just believe the guy and wander off? But then you provide a built-in excuse that doesn't actually have to be... utilized, but it's put in the audience's head as a potential justification.
That's what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is probably something similar to the effect of, like, if they only put things in that happened in the episode, it would become kind of predictable, I guess. So you got to add some stuff there.
Man, we're brilliant.
We are very smart people.
Yeah. Super genius.
We are very, very smart people.
What's the next smart thing we're going to say? I've got a couple of smart points that I want to save to the end.
Oh, wait.
So fucking good.
Okay, cool. But
like, no joke. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
I got some good points.
So, I mean,
but I'm holding them back.
So,
that's why I talked about that whole MC Hammer thing.
So,
that was vamping.
So, I guess, I mean, we're on the
same. I'm the vampist. I'm sorry.
Why am I being interrupted?
I already kind of mentioned this. We're on the subject of Harry Kim. So, is this.
If Betty Grable came around that corner, what part of her would you be staring at?
And then that's when he goes.
Her legs! I'd be staring at her legs.
Now, I think the purpose of that was, of course, to make us think about something naughtier. But, you know, legs is, I don't know, back in the 90s, I don't
what
know.
Else were you, what else could you see on Betty Grable? Probably just her legs, right?
Yeah, it's just, it was a weird line.
That was all that was showing.
It was a weird line, right?
Yeah, they never showed any other part of Betty Grable.
Yeah, they didn't show it at all.
People might
it just was like
to.
A weird thing to insert in the episode. Like I said, it's the 90s, so there was the sensibilities. I'm not making excuses or anything. I'm just saying the sensibilities were a little different back then. But it just seems like a weird thing to throw in there. It's like they're going to be, the audience is going to be thinking of something way naughty, but it's going to be innocent, like her legs.
So first of all, point number one, Dan, I totally agree with you. 100%.
And people in the 90s knew who Betty Grable was.
And I was thinking about that. I was like, is it Betty Rubble? I was also thinking that, too.
You don't get it.
But what did you guys think he was referring to. What did you guys think was the answer to the question?
You know, one of the spots, you know.
Which spots?
You know what spots.
No, I want to know specifically. I'll freely tell you.
Like the scrotum?
Okay. I did not think
Betty Grable's scrotum.
You were talking about looking at Betty Grable's scrotum.
Are you sure?
I'd be into looking at Betty Grable's scrotum. I thought he was implying boobs.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm childish and it was just the first thing that came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really, can't even picture Betty Grable. I'm familiar with the name.
Right now.
She's a famous actor.
Right now I'm being like Lieutenant Garrett from Section 31, where I'm being all prudish about, like, remember? Because they were like, she was talking about like, Alok Sahar was supposed to, you know, with Giorgio, and then Alok Sahar was like, you can say it. She's like, connect with, because she didn't want to say the word. That's how I'm being.
Jesse, what'd you think? Did you think boobs? But
no, I figured scrotum. He was going to say something like legs.
All right,
so I thought she was going to say butt.
Because it was like,
I didn't think they were actually going to say boobs or butt, but it did evoke that imagery in my head, and it made me mad
It made me mad.
It's like they did what they were trying to do.
Without consent, they made you think of Betty Grable's butt.
Yeah, and I don't even know what she looks like.
And that made you angry.
But her name's Betty.
Did Monty Python ever sing about Betty Grable? Or just Clark Gable? I think it was just Clark Gable.
Huh. There's Clark Gable. Yeah.
Knights of the Round Table.
Something about pushing prams around.
Push the pram a lot.
Yeah, I gotta push. I like to push my pram a lot.
I have to push my pram a lot.
It's a silly place.
Okay.
I must have tripped a communication subroutine. Sorry, but I must have tripped a communication subroutine. Sorry about that. I must have tripped.
I'm guessing
I don't get it. I don't get it.
You
don't
get it.
I don't get it.
A communication subroutine. Sorry.
Where would I stay?
Well done, sir. You put Trip Tucker in with the trip line.
See, first it was like
I must have tripped a communication subroutine. No, sorry about that.
And then I did this.
I must have tripped.
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it.
A communication subroutine. Sorry about that.
Where would I stay?
Sorry about that.
It was good.
Yeah. It was good. Sorry about that. It's pretty good, right?
It was very good.
It was good. We can think about how good that was some more.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I was impressed with Harry Kim, especially his lying, right? He was doing a good job. You just played a good example there. But the Herogen aren't joking around, right? Because you know how you were talking earlier about the Nazi and the Herogen Nazi and the hologram, and how if they were really looking
holograms?
For something, they would have taken it more seriously, holograms. Right? When they were harassing
right,
Neelix.
Yeah, exactly.
So in that case, they were just harassing for the sake of harassing. These Herogen were not doing that. They were doing their job.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed this scene with Harry lying to them about what he was doing and the whole tripping the communications thing. And then the Herogen being like, no, bullshit, show us.
Right.
Because it's so nice in Star Trek when they actually do the sensible thing, because so often it's a TV show, so there's shortcuts and they take, but we didn't have that there. No. It was like, no, Harry's going to have to get beaten up a little bit. And then saved by a sort of saved by the bell type situation.
No, I agree. I'm glad that it didn't work. I guess it goes along. It kind of goes along in the similar principle of, like, not the same thing, but him telling that guy, if they question you, say this, and then him never actually saying it. It's kind of like these attempts at things that they don't all pan out, but, like, you know, in the end something happens.
One thing I thought was missing, not just from this episode, from Voyager in general, and I'm wondering if it's an idea that they ever pursued or maybe even filmed and just cut out, but I always wondered, why didn't they have at least one episode, if not like a reoccurring gag, where Harry Kim fights off invaders with his clarinet, and that he does it in some amazing way. He does like clarinet foo. Where he's like flipping it around, and he's like, and then like the gag is he's just like shoves it up the alien's butt and then like toots. He's like,
and he toots.
Right.
I don't remember how long this goes on for.
And he's doing.
I remember commenting.
It's longer.
This was the shorter one. Good.
He does that. He shoves the clarinet down a Herogen's throat and then starts playing it, and then the Herogen inflates and explodes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity indeed. This is me vamping. No, this is my segue. Missed opportunity indeed.
Segue?
Nazi.
We are German.
Earlier we were talking about Neelix getting to play these different characters.
Oh, yeah, like...
I'm as dry as the crater at Tarfac.
That whole part was amazing.
That sounds very close to Bilbo with his 11th birthday.
Yeah, this is 11th birthday. I gotta get that sound clip.
Bilbo.
In the middle of the dry season.
Another.
When it's dry.
Another actor who got to really flex.
He did really good.
Flex their chops.
He did. Who plays Neelix? What's his name again?
Ethan Phillips.
Ethan Phillips did really do a great job as that Klingon. Yeah. Like it was totally awesome. But it was amazing how he switched like that.
But Jeri Ryan got to demonstrate that her range in multiple ways. One was the singing. Did mm-hmm. a wonderful job with that. And then she was playing this character And it wasn't just her, because they did it with Tuvok as well, where their characters in the holodeck still retain some of their real life characteristics, right?
Yeah,
so like,
right.
Tuvok's character is not a Vulcan, but he's still kind of into logic.
Right.
Jeri Ryan, you know, Seven of Nine's character is a singer and a crooner, so she's got a looser attitude, but she still has a little bit of that Borg coldness that the Seven of Nine character has. But I was really impressed that moment that the neural transmitter was deactivated on Seven of Nine when she was in the middle of singing.
You could tell because it went, it made a noise.
And the nuanced difference that Jeri Ryan was able to portray between the character, who's still a little Borg-like, singing the song, to, oh no, I'm just Seven of Nine. I have no idea what's going on. It's literally a nightmare people have of being like waking up into consciousness on stage and not knowing what you're supposed to do.
You don't have any pants on.
If you've ever been a performer,
then your teeth fall out.
That's a nightmare that you will eventually have of like, you're just like on stage with an instrument or in a play or something. And you're like, I don't know what's going on. I just appeared on stage here.
Loosen up, baby doll.
How did I get here?
That was really impressive.
Great gams.
Tuvok switching was also impressive, but there was less of a difference. So it was less impressive.
I like
the same thing with B'Elanna. The characters were more similar than not.
I like Tuvok. I like at the end, this is just sort of a side quest that I'm thinking about. At the end, when Tuvok fought, everyone was doing their boisterous fighting, and he did his like calm Klingon, or not Klingon, Vulcan fighting. Just the wrong word. It's not a big deal. He did his calm Vulcan fighting, where he did very slow movement. He was just like, he did like three moves, and they all fell over.
He was like lurking in the shadows.
Yeah. Now, I will say, and I agree with you, that's one thing I noticed too, Patrick, to add to that.
Two Patricks.
You said my name out loud, which means you are engaging with me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a visual cue expert or a body language expert would say something like that, right? Right, so we noticed their personalities still come through, but it kind of made it confusing. Even though the scene with Neelix was super awesome and I liked how their personalities stuck out, mm-hmm. They were kind of at odds with each other, because Neelix as a Klingon showed no signs of Neelix at all. Like because like everyone else, like you just said, Patrick, like their personality shown through, and but except for Neelix when he was a Klingon, he was just there was no trace of Neelix at all in that character. It was very Klingon. And so I liked both of those aspects, but I think those two parts were a little bit at odds, not enough for me to really be stressed out about it. You can argue that away, but it's just to me it was a little incongruous.
Now that you mention it, there's also not much difference between French resistance fighter Neelix and Neelix.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right?
Guten Tag?
Yeah, he's still being...
So in that case, he's basically Neelix.
Yeah.
He's not even talking French. But then in the Klingon case, he's super Klingon. So he even did something...
Maybe it's something about his species. What are they, Torgonians or something?
Yes, Torgonians.
Yeah.
Famously.
Smarlocks?
Neelix. No. He holds the rank of Smarlocks in the empire of the what'd you call them? The Tarkolians?
I don't know.
Smarlocks
you know,
of Tarkonia.
It's common knowledge, apparently.
I am the high Smarlocks of Tarkonia. Beware and
space
tremble.
Creep.
He's a Jimble? Or
we're
what?
The space creeps.
What are they? Jimble.
No, that was... Kes was a Jimble.
Now we play these incessant games.
By the way,
I require a glass of water.
I like. Do you have that line where the Alpha Hirogen just says, "Play the game"?
Oh yeah, I think I have that somewhere.
Sit down and play the game.
Yeah, I like that.
Play the game.
Play the game.
The game.
Play
the game.
Neelix, the Snarlax. No, he is a Talaxian.
That's what I said.
A Talaxian.
That's what I was been saying from the beginning.
He is the Grand Morlock of the Talaxian orders.
The Grand Morlock.
Though from the stench of it, I'd say it's begun to already.
Logic is irrelevant.
That was interesting how her character kind of like, even when she became Seven again, she showed like
Seven again.
She showed pride in this episode because she didn't want to sing when the guy was like, sing for me.
Yeah.
She was like, fuck that and fuck you.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah. And then at that point when she was, Tuvok could tell she was getting pissed and she went,
logic is irrelevant.
So those are kind of like un-Seven. She's not usually prideful like that, but she was in this episode. So you could tell she was getting, even Seven of Nine does not stand for that Nazi bullshit.
Yeah, no. The Borg are like, you know, this Nazi guy is a piece of shit.
Oh, Janeway even threatened him. It's like, I can't wait till the Borg get to you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right? did you have any of the, you mentioned earlier about some of these Nazi lines that made you uncomfortable. Yeah. Did you record, you had the German veer, the purity of the German blood.
The purity of German blood.
Do you have any of the other distasteful lines, or are you trying to whitewash the Nazis by not including them?
Yes, of course.
I don't even know if were there a few.
Do you have this, the line? Well,
I don't have most of that final speech. I was like, but I did keep this one.
We are driven by the very force that gives life to the universe itself.
Which was confusing because they mentioned we don't follow a Christian God, we don't follow a Jewish God, we follow the force.
Well, specifically the Christian Savior.
Christian Savior, you're right. But it's confusing because aren't they all about the Christian thing? Or is there something about...
the Jewish people.
Arguably, Nazis are not really about the Christian thing.
The relationship
but
between Nazism and Christianity, specifically Catholicism, is fascinating and complex because they were ostensibly, in one sense, pursuing Catholic greatness. On the other hand, there were a lot of Nazis that were interested more in sort of the Gnostic side of things, the magic of the Bible, which is one of the key plot elements to a little movie known as Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
And then
this guy was just a more exuberant, eccentric Nazi, I guess.
No, I think this was probably pretty standard Nazi stuff.
Just to be like, we're going to talk about how like Christianity and the Savior is the only way, but we don't actually believe in it.
Sort of, yeah. There's a utilitarian side. It's a bit like Scientology or some of the other groups where there's like levels and you're like, if you're down here, you feed on one type of bullshit, but then if you're up here, you eat some different type of bullshit.
When there's like a movie or a show and there's some kind of like white supremacist faction, there's always some white supremacists that are getting pissed off that the head white supremacist is like dealing with people who aren't white because like they're doing it out of utilitarian stuff, but the people at the bottom are like, hey, I thought we hated these people, you know, and getting all disenchanted.
Oh, if you, I'm not encouraging it, but
these people did.
These people, Nazis.
For research on a paper once, I had to explore some of these terrible websites, and while the conversations were really awful, it was also somewhat amusing to hear their forms of philosophical debates that often were related to how to rank the races and some white supremacists. For example, there's a whole segment of white supremacists that argue that Asians are superior to whites,
that makes them
not racist because they're saying like, we're not saying that we're perfect. We think Asians are better. We're just saying we're better than blacks or Latinos.
A bunch of clowns.
Yeah, yeah, there is a lot of that.
Clownery. Clown foolery.
It is one of the
clown foolery is what it is.
It was one of the problems when you combine a certain facility for rationalization and philosophy with hateful attitudes where people are able to, you know, create whatever nonsense logic. It's not actually logical, but if they can craft a reality where it can seem like it's logical. Anyway,
if I may speak freely.
The line I was going to
mention. If I may speak freely.
Oh, are you trying to speak?
If I may speak freely.
Oh, okay. I don't know if freely? You're making a request or.
Surely.
What? All right, you've got 10 seconds because we got to go to break.
If I may speak freely.
Clown foolery.
The purity, clowning. The purity of the German blood.
Logic is irrelevant.
All right. Well, before we go to break, the line I was going to reference is in that guy's speech, because I think it's important. It's important to understand the fascist philosophy, the Nazi philosophy, and this character's philosophy. Is he's talking about, he's like, the Romans were civilized. The Jews are civilized.
Right. Yeah.
He's making the argument it's not about civilization, it's about power. And that the purity of the German blood is all about the raw power. They're drawing literally from the mana of nature. They are tapping all those mana cards, and that's what makes them superior. And we're going to argue against that when we get back from the break. Right. Well, no, hold on. Let me pull back.
Schnell! Schnell!
Totally fucked that up. We're going to go to the break, and we're going to do the break when I say we'll be right back. So I'm about to say, Dan's ready with his finger over the sound clip. We will be right back.
I'm afraid I have to neglect you again. Excuse me.
And we're back.
How did you get past our battle lines? Okay. Enter.
So you know all this, like, the purity of the German blood, this stuff? It keeps making me think. I know we're not technically allowed to do this until episode 300.
Oh, okay. There we go.
But every time...
going to break a rule already.
Every time you're talking about
the
purity of the German blood, it makes me think of that video in Jurassic Park where the little DNA is like, I'm in your blood.
Yeah.
Dino DNA.
You think that was the inspiration for Badgie?
No, the inspiration like for Badgie
was
that Clippy.
Clippy from the Microsoft?
Yeah.
Oh,
Think there's many kids know about Clippy?
Do you think that thing in Jurassic Park was inspired by Clippy as well?
Might have been.
Kids that are like 26.
I'm in your blood. All right. Anyway, back to the fascism.
Go.
Oh, this one actually goes on for a while, so I'm going to turn this down.
I'm just going to sort of fade that. Fade it down. Fade it down.
I like that one Klingon falls over. Actually, this is a segue I want to talk about real quick.
That was the fucking Gremlins. That sounds exactly like in Gremlins when they're all like walking around saying, like, dun 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 dun.
I was going to say, you know, I know Klingons are hard drinkers and everything, but you don't want to be hungover going into battle.
Yeah.
And if you want to say Klingons have a backup liver, or they don't get hangovers, that's bullshit. Because at the one point, the doctor was like talking something about Klingons even hungover are some of the fiercest fighters in the world, which implies that if they weren't hungover, they'd be even fiercer. So those are some irresponsible Klingons getting that drunk before fight.
Not the first irresponsible Klingons we've ever met, and they're not the last.
Maybe they underestimated their prey. That's their problem.
They may have.
Kapla.
Yeah, it happens from time to time.
Yeah, it does.
Kapla!
Were there any that's and orders?
No, there weren't.
I didn't clock any, but I made a note to ask because it is a two-part episode, and Janeway does like saying that's an order.
So there was something that was...
That's an order. Hey, you think Janeway goes to Starbucks and gets some...
I know. She wants to get coffee. We already know where this is going. But it'd still be funny, so keep going.
She's like, I'll have a flat white, two sugars.
And he's like, what? Okay.
That's an order.
Please don't do this.
I mean, really, this is one of those examples of, as a performer, you just need to please yourself. Yeah. Do what's true to yourself.
What's he talking about?
What you believe in. And a segment of the audience will go with you. All right. So, you were talking about something or other. Janeway.
Oh, yeah. That's an order.
That's an order.
This is not specifically that, but it's very close. Chakotay says, show me your animal guide. No, that's Janeway says.
Show me your animal guide.
That's what she says to him. Chakotay says, get them on the horn. You'll lead us into the compound, but I'm coming with you. And Janeway says, I work better alone. And then Chakotay says, this isn't a request. It's an order. That's fine because it's not pre-coming. I don't know what.
Why would you say that?
What?
What's with all the coming lately? Last week, Jesse was all like talking about shooting cum all over the place.
Oh, man.
And now you're talking about pre-coming. Come on.
You know,
who was talking about
shooting cum? It wasn't, God, I've been having word problems lately. Like, what do they call the drugs that prescription drugs that fuck you up in the head, and so they have to be put on a section one or section
narcotics?
Two?
Narcotics.
Section two.
Are you talking about narcotics?
No, it's a term for the. It's what they do to you. It's like Percocet.
Percocet
is
makes you perky. Makes you feel perky.
It makes you feel all drugged up. It's such a simple word that I know from known for my whole life. I can't remember it anymore. But what I was going to say is that one of the problems I have with That's in Order is it's they say it too soon. So I was trying to think of pre. And there's a word that I'm thinking about that pre-something. So I just thought it was like pre-coming.
Oh, okay, but that's where the pre-coming came from.
That was like the closest word I could think of to describe what I was talking about was pre-coming, which says something about me. Nothing good, but something.
Look, we don't need to denigrate a perfectly natural bodily function.
It's just, it needs to be done appropriately.
Yes, it needs to be done appropriately.
Right. So
that's correct, sir.
He didn't say it before it was required.
At every level.
He didn't use the generic line. He didn't say it was before it was required because he said it because she was resisting and then he had to remind her that's an order. See, before they just say like, that's an order and they don't even give someone a chance to do it. Or they do it in a stupid scenario where it's like, you know, like I've said, it's like, push me off the cliff. No, boss, that's an order, you know. And so he pushes him off the cliff. Yeah. It's like, oh, you pushed me off the cliff.
But there weren't any
that's
an orders on this.
And so
episode.
That's always the example you use when you're trying to explain your issue with this cliche.
Because I got it all worked out in my head. It's easy to say. I know it probably seems a little redundant. I know it's not, there's no that's an order, Jesse. That's my whole point is I'm saying.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is there's something very close to it. And I'm telling you why it's okay. It's very close to that's an order.
I'm digging it.
So she was like not doing something he wanted her to do. And then he said that. And so it's okay. Now, here's the problem with that part, though, because that's fine. But then like her reaction, which I like, it's like, do I look like I'm wearing one of your uniforms? She's like, fuck you. You can't control me. But then he says, I thought you needed our help. He's using two excuses. He tried one excuse, which is I'm ordering you to do it. And then when she reminded him that he can't order her to do things, he was like, well, I thought you wanted to do it. You know, in those situations, you pick one or the other. Either you go with, I command you to do this. And if they say no, you're shit out of luck. Or you try to coax them into doing it by, you know, baiting them, saying like, you want to do this, right? You pick one or the other, but you can't order someone to do something. And then when they turn it down, follow it up with, I thought you wanted to do it. Because the original reason, your motivation for the original statement was, you have no choice. You have no choice, I'm ordering you. But since she does have a choice, she doesn't have to do it. And so he follows it up with, okay, well, you have a choice, but I thought you wanted to do it. It's like if a kid caught a kid's hand in the cookie jar, and the kid was like, I wasn't doing that. And then the mom was like, I saw you doing that. And then the kid was suddenly like, well, you said I could. You know, you're switching up your excuses. You got to stick with one lie. You can't combine your lies like that.
Moving the goalposts.
Something like that, I guess.
Now, earlier in this little mini rant, you referenced something about baiting them.
I wasn't talking about masturbating.
I just was wondering if that was connected to that whole pre-cum business that you were talking about.
No. Right. I don't think any of you followed what I said, but that's okay.
No, I did. I thought, I mean.
I did.
You stated it eloquently.
Sometimes I wonder.
You're an eloquent stater.
There's no need to restate it.
So that's what you're just saying that because you don't want me to repeat myself. I see what you're doing. You're all out to get me is the problem.
Okay.
That's the thing is you guys are out to get me.
Jesse and I have talked to you.
You don't understand me and you're out to get me.
We've talked to you offline about this. We are not in fact out to get you.
You say you understand me, but you don't understand me and you're out to get me.
Well, no. Jesse, are you out to get Dan?
Not usually.
No, me neither. Not usually.
Sometimes.
Not unless
we're special occasions.
We're picking him up to take him to a party.
This is not a game.
All right. So
buttons.
I promised earlier.
So buttons.
I promised earlier that I had a real solid point.
Oh, did I break? Did you eat too many cheeses and milks and now you know your point's not solid anymore?
Okay, I was like, I'm really curious where that was going to go. Turned out, went nowhere. The point I
he doesn't understand
the solid point.
Not slimy.
Solid.
And
solid point.
Not liquidy and slimy.
And I'm sure plenty of other people observe this, but I did think it was really good. Look, we've cited many examples from this episode about how well it's written, how well it's structured. But I think one of the key examples is towards the end of the episode when Janeway is talking to the Alpha Hirogen. She comes into his office. Well, her office.
She
right?
pre-comes into his office.
No.
No.
Are you sure?
Okay. He calls her into her own office. He's sitting at her desk. So he's sitting behind Janeway's desk. Janeway is standing opposite to him. And that's how they begin their conversation.
It should prove stimulating.
And at the beginning of this conversation, Janeway, of course, has this fairly justified preconceived notion of what the Herogen's motivations are, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Old news.
Throughout that conversation, they're talking and he gets up and he's making some points. It's very subtle, but the way they choreograph this scene is so brilliant that as the power dynamics in the conversation shift, their physical location shifts until at the end of the conversation, she's standing behind the desk and he's standing in front of the desk where she came in. So they've physically exchanged power positions. Janeway has regained command effectively at that point, rhetorically. And what's particularly good about this is that Janeway has that preconception of, oh, the Herogen, they're just coming to fuck us up and torture us. She listens to what he has to say and immediately reevaluates her perceptions and adjusts them and adjusts her strategy accordingly. And that's brilliant Star Trek. That's brilliant storytelling, brilliant command. It's an example of how good Janeway is that she feels passionately and strongly about her conclusions. She's happy to immediately change those conclusions because she's interested in actually doing what makes sense. So when she gets new information from the Alpha Herogen, in this case, he talks about the whole business about needing to help their culture and his idea of using the holodecks to do it. She's like, you know what? I get hologram? You now. I had misunderstood your motivation. I now understand it better by talking to you. We've communicated, and now I can formulate a new plan that's actually going to work out for everybody. And even though he ends up dead and doesn't get to see it because he's Moses in this analogy, does not get to see the promised land. He is the person who can lead the people to the promised land. And Janeway helps him. I don't know. Maybe she's the burning bush.
And then the icing on the cake is she strokes his ego a little bit at the end.
It would be cunning for you to agree.
Yes.
Like very, very
well. And
very much. There's like very much like him. Like, oh, yeah, I guess it would be. Like, I think it would be. I think he might be a little bit like too smart to fall for that. But
you call it stroking his ego, but which it is. But I think it's an example, and there's an even better one later in the episode of Janeway just demonstrating her understanding of the utility of appreciating someone's culture and communicating with them in a context that their culture would understand. Because at the very end of the episode with the whole hologram thing, the guy is all reluctant to take it because he's like, I didn't believe in that fucking bullshit that the Alpha Herogen was talking about.
Hologram?
And she's like, consider it a trophy and then do with it what you fucking want.
Right.
And she recontextualized the thing for the guy in a way that was acceptable within their culture and power structure. Right. So now he could accept it. Janeway was very smart to be able to do that. And it was another example of how you get something done by communicating with somebody, learning about them and understanding them. Even if they're your enemy, even if they're killing you, there's a way to do that. Potentially.
That box that she gave him the fix-it box.
From TNG. That was what they put Moriarty in.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It's like, it's got to be the same prop.
So what if that breaks? I mean, I assume they would have information on how to build a new one, but it's not like a lathe. It can't like build itself.
I think my understanding
it can make holographic versions of itself, but if that thing broke, they're Dunsky.
My understanding was that whatever we were meant to understand about this unit it had everything they need to immediately start making their own holodecks.
I know, and I know that was the implication is like, this is all you need. Yeah. And this is the most practical, quickest way to let the audience know that this is all you need. Yeah. This thing.
This
I know.
This old prop from TNG.
Yeah, right.
From the great episode where they put Moriarty.
They're like, well, we can't really convey the fact that they need to give them information.
Elementary, my dear Data.
We can't convey the fact that we need to give them a bunch of information so they know how to make new stuff that take too long to explain. So why put any effort into it all? Let's just grab an old prop and everyone will know what it means.
Well, and you bring to mind, you know, they had two episodes worth of space.
Two episodes,
but they had a nice steady pace. There's plenty of action, but there's a lot of breathing room. Not to use a Nazi analogy, but what they need is breathing room in these episodes of Star Trek compared to Section 31.
He's been questioning German superiority.
In Section 31, there's 2 hours or whatever, an hour and a half of just just squeezing in a bunch of crazy bullshit.
So all you get is crazy chaos.
It's nonsense. And here we have an hour and 20 minutes where we get to see a fun story that moves right along, but has plenty of breathing room for the characters to talk and interact and contemplate, and lets the audience have room to breathe.
For me, the greatest prize of war is art.
And this episode was an example of art. See, it wasn't a non sequitur.
No, that wasn't a non sequitur.
You asked me to play some of the German officer stuff, and I really don't have that. Yeah, well, we already went over that. Yeah, that whole speech at the end, like, I remember the part you were talking about like different cultures and all that stuff. The only line was I pulled out was that one that I played earlier, because, yeah, I don't know. It made me feel a little weird, like, taking some of those down for posterity. I don't know. Maybe that's my own shit that I got to deal with.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He said some fucked up shit.
Yeah. You know, why do I need to record Germans talking about, or Nazis talking about how great Nazis are? You know, why do I need a recording of that?
Because it's the episode we watched.
Yeah. I mean, I did... You know, I did put, like, you know, this one.
The purity of German blood.
But that's only because I liked how he said it.
I'm in your blood. That's only because I really liked how the handsome Nazi said it. Yeah. He said it so cleverly. The purity of the German blood.
We are German.
We are German.
Tally-ho.
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable.
If Betty Grable came around that corner, what part of her would you be staring at?
Betty Grable.
Any other plot points, or should we move along to some bits and bobs, odds and ends? There's a bunch of odds and ends in this business.
Do you remember at the beginning of the second episode when she had to, like, take who was she with? Was it like Balana or something? I don't know. But they were fighting at the beginning, and she took them to Astrometrics. Do you remember when they went to Astrometrics?
Instead of Astrometrics?
Let's get to Astrometrics.
Astrometrics.
I didn't notice that.
Yep.
I did notice that Tuvok was playing the Ted Lane character, Isaac Washington from the Love Boat.
I never actually watched a single episode of that show.
Seriously?
That was one of those shows that, it was like Mama's Family, where when it started, it gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Mama's Family, I wasn't a big fan of. I liked the character as originated on Carol Burnett show.
Yeah, it was a funny character, skit-like thing.
I watched every episode of Mama's Family, but I didn't really like it. But
I hated every minute of it.
No, I didn't hate it. It wasn't great. Love Boat is worth checking out. I think it's on Hulu. Or Disney Plus or something. It's on there somewhere. I think it's on Hulu.
It's just a crazy idea.
Go watch the first episode of Love Boat. I'm guessing you're going to find some entertainment out of it.
Where would I stay?
Well, you can stay at your house, at a hotel, wherever you like. If you got a laptop, if you got a Chromecast, an Apple TV, if you got a Roku, if you got a Kindle Fire, you can load up Hulu or whatever equivalent thing. Watch.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Watch the Love Boat.
It's thanks, Agamemnon.
All right. I also noticed that, and we see this sometimes in Star Trek, but it seemed to jump out here. So Janeway is in her Casablanca type club, and she's walking around the club being the club owner person and talking to all these extras who don't have lines. Right. And it's so funny because there's like, obviously they didn't want to give them lines because you have to pay a different day rate if somebody has a line, but it just stands out really much when the host is doing all this one-sided small talk.
Well, that reminds me that I almost forgot to mention this part. Remember when we talked about how Harry was talking to that officer and was like, if they give you any trouble, say I can't complete the assignment without it. That was that dude's only line, and they never used that line. They actually never used that, and that was his only line. Yeah, they do that a lot, but for that character, they didn't. And in fact, that dude is listed on the front page of IMDb. David Keith Anderson is the ensign who gets told, I can't complete the assignment without it. And actually...
He pops up on Voyager a fair bit. He's one of their like go-to...
So that's why he got a line. That must be so annoying for the people like that didn't get a line, where it's like, well, my line would have made sense in context because we're small talking, but you got a line that never even got... ended up getting used. It says his line was, we need an isolinear emitter from engineering. Right. So I guess he did have an important line that they needed an isolinear emitter.
Everybody does.
I mean, that was his whole thing. But hey, Harry could have said that. Harry could have been like, you need an isolinear emitter from engineering. So I get it. They gave him a line because he already had, they already paid for him already somewhere along the line. So they were just like, well, we'll just keep paying this.
One question I had was, why was the Alpha Hirogen always holding the like he was using a Voyager communicator pin and he was always holding it all daintily, like holding it up in front of his mouth, like with two fingers.
Car? I didn't notice that. So I couldn't tell you.
So like, why? Well, it was the main guy, the old guy.
Yeah,
the old
Car.
Hirogen.
Car.
Is that his name?
K-A-R-R, Car.
So watch the episode. It's bizarre. It's a bizarre thing. Every time he's communicating, first of all, it's like, why aren't they using their own communicators? It's like, okay, I guess they're like on the ship. Maybe it's like easier for some reason. Okay. Why doesn't he like just put it on his uniform or something? He's like all holding it out like he's got a teacup in his hand. It's very peculiar.
Oh, by the way, Memory Alpha does list his name as Car.
All right.
Isn't that interesting? For a second, I kept thinking that, that Alpha Hirogen Car, we'll just call him by his whole fucking name. I kept thinking he looked like Ed Begley Jr. for some reason. I don't know. With his makeup, he kept reminding me of Ed Begley Jr., even though he looks nothing like him. Maybe it was his mouth. Something about his mouth made me think of
that. The
actor's
been in other stuff. I forget what now, but he's one of those character actor types.
Oh, there was an example of Janeway saying, they do this sometimes. They did it a lot in Discovery, I think, where they try to fit in too much line in a stressful scenario where it's time sensitive. Like B'Elanna and Janeway are like planning that bomb in Nazi headquarters at the end of the first episode, and then Janeway goes,
"Didn't you say this was Nazi headquarters?"
"I did."
"Then it would stand to reason this building is being targeted. Let's get out of here."
Like, she could have just said, "Let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah, let's get out of here." Like, anything. But she's like, you had to reason about it.
Explosions outside. Yeah. It's like, it stands to reason.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. How about this? Let's go.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
I did.
What I did catch was that this
secret passageways are Jeffrey's tubes.
This backlot they filmed on looked a lot like what they used for Fairhaven and Spirit Folk, which Jesse and I did an episode. Dan was out of town or something. And Jesse and I did an episode where we did both those weird Irish holodeck program episodes of Voyager.
Holograms?
Yeah. Oh, and Jesse and I were drinking Irish whiskey the whole time. So we both get like really hammered on the podcast and talk about fucking Spirit Folk and Fairhaven. That was episode 79 of It's Got Star Trek.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it was a while back. While back.
I feel I must mention that ridiculous Tarange death scene where they got pushed off the ship, and then they switched to that view of him falling towards it. And like, I guess
Janeway shot him.
Janeway shot him. And I guess they either ran out of time, forgot, or ran out of money because they forgot to color in his CGI character falling.
It looked weird.
He was all silver. I paused it, and it's like he's got silver hair, silver body. It's like it was all chrome silver. It was like the silliest fucking death scene. I love it because I watched it like five times because it's so cool, because it's so ridiculous, but it's terrible. It's like, I don't know, like, why they didn't color them in, or they could have done some. They were going for something awesome, and they kind of fell flat. But they came up with something kind of awesome in a totally different reason, which is the reason you don't want it to be awesome, which is it looks ridiculous.
I can't remember which episode it is, but I think one of the worst special effects in all of Star Trek is in a Voyager episode, and I have the vaguest memory that there. I think there's like a shuttlecraft or something that's like on a cliff. And somehow somebody like falls, gets kicked out the back of the shuttlecraft or something along those lines, and falls off the cliff. And it looks really hilariously fake, even worse than this. So something to look forward to. We'll come across it eventually.
I think, remind me the actor who plays Chakotay. I know I've heard
Beltran.
Robert Beltran.
I think he kind of phoned it in this episode.
He did a lot of phoning.
I mean, I wasn't really buying him when he was like,
"Listen, honey, the time for sneaking messages back and forth is over. This is war."
It's like, I didn't buy any of it. And then,
how many guys do they got? It's just like him and the other guy.
And then at the end, when they won that battle, which apparently implies, I guess there were more battles that followed, but they like won this big battle at the end, and he's just like,
"It's over. Let's go."
Like, the whole of his celebration is just like, "It's over. Okay." Yeah. There's not like, "Yay, hooray." Yeah. Or got him, you know? Got him, you know?
You're a gung-ho kind of gal, aren't you? They believe this could be an advanced munitions laboratory designed to build some kind of super weapon.
It's all on one level. Everything he says is very sort of monotonic. Is that a word? Monotonic?
No. When Tangerine...
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, maybe it is. But it's not what you mean. The Tangerine fella, when he's all like hunting Janeway... And he underestimates her, but he's hunting her, and he's all like feeling for her body heat on the Jeffrey's tube door.
The Jeffrey tube secret passage.
He's still wearing his glove. I'm like, wait, take off your glove, buddy. Take off your glove. I know the makeup department didn't want to have to pay for alien lizard hand, but come on. It looked silly. He was all like feeling with his glove, with his leather Nazi glove, right? Come on.
They spent too much money on those weird Herogen helmets. Grasp their face. By the way, monotonic, definition 2, speaking or uttered with an unchanging pitch or tone. Boom, bitches.
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I wasn't paying attention. Were you referring to it?
I said when all of his, the way Chakotay spoke was very monotonic. And I was like, and both of you guys were like, that's not the right word to use.
I don't know that Jesse said anything.
Well, he did say something. He was like, no, it's not. And then Patrick was like, that's stupid, Dan, and you're stupid.
Dan, you're so stupid.
We're calling in an airstrike.
It was really fun to see Klingons killing Nazis.
And Klingons around Uranus.
And I could imagine, almost, I don't think that's the case I think I'm going to know where you're going.
If you're not going there with this, I'm going to follow it up with where I'm going to go.
All right, I was just thinking that I could imagine a writer seeing a vision of, wouldn't it be funny to see Klingons killing Nazis, and then working from backwards from that to like write these two episodes.
Oh, you think that could have been like...
I don't actually think that, but every now and then you see a scene or a certain shot in an episode of Star Trek, and you're like, it's very clear they came up with that first, and they were like, we have to write a story that lets us do this. And I got a little bit of that vibe because they were having so much fun directing and acting Klingons with bat lifts just fucking mowing down fucking Nazis.
It was pretty violent. Like when the German soldier died, you don't actually see it, but you see the dude's the bat lift. Like, it's one of the few times you see a bat lift actually used to fucking stab and kill someone, and chop at someone.
You're in the perspective of the victim.
Yeah. And even though you don't see blood, it's the sound and the perspective and all that. It's like, it's pretty violent.
And I want my scalps.
But I was going to say, in some universe where this episode was like a trilogy or like a season long arc or something, I could see a universe where instead of just Klingons, this is totally different to what you're saying. Instead of just Klingons fighting it, like somehow the Nazis pissed off all the Star Trek all-stars, like the Romulans and the Vulcans, you know, and like, you know, all the other people.
So it's just like a series of aliens fucking kicking Nazis.
The end battle is all the different species come running in.
Are you imagining
something
like
the Nazis?
Are you imagining like the portal scene in Avengers Endgame?
Oh no.
with Nazis on one side running towards every Star Trek alien.
And I take that back. Yes, I am
the
thinking
Andorians.
That. I'm thinking exactly that.
The Saurians with their Saurian brandy.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. But back to the violence, when she killed Taranj with the gun, like every time, it's always weird when Star Trek like has ballistic guns, like rifles and shit, and they're always commenting on how crude the technology is. This is very crude. But it made it extra violent, like when she shot Taranj, you know, with that shit and with this fucking gun. It seems it's got much more like than a phaser. Phaser, they just. I mean,
I'll do it if I have to.
It's interesting. Which is more violent, like gunning someone down in Star Trek with a crude ballistic rifle, or like in Conspiracy and TNG when they zap the alien dude and you see his brains and heads explode. Arguably, the second one is more violent, but I don't know.
It was a peculiar situation.
The first one seems a little bit like more like shocking in a way. Yeah. I don't know. You know, that it was pretty shocking when that happened in Conspiracy.
It was very shocking.
But it was comic. There was something comical almost about it.
A little bit.
But there's nothing comical about getting gunned down with a fucking rifle. Yeah. Unless it's got silly music or something. And they didn't have silly music.
It is a little funny.
But that wasn't
gunning down Nazis is hilarious.
Yeah, but that wasn't a Nazi. That was
it's both practical and hilarious.
Yeah, that wasn't a Nazi, though. That was just the Herogen Taranj.
Yeah, but he was like Nazi adjacent. He was wearing a Nazi uniform.
I still think when the Nazi was giving his speech at the end, Taranj had this look like, you're just fucking crazy, man.
Yeah, but then he did go along with it.
He did, so. Maybe he just like thought the guy had a good idea, but he wasn't into his whole Nazi bullshit.
Yeah, it's like kind of that's not unusual, where it's like, I agree with you, but for different reasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I always find this like heartwarming in this strange way that it's not when you look at it, it's not really heartwarming. It's just practical. But like when Harry and Carr, the Alpha Hirogen, were like trying to like work together to fight like the holograms that were taking over the ship. Mm-hmm. Like I always think it's like, oh, they're enemies and they want to kill each other, but they can work together for this one situation, even though it's just, you know, not practical. It's like that episode. Do you remember that animated series Cops back in the early 90s where they were like future cops that had like special future weapons? Like one guy was bulletproof. The cops and robbers were always fighting each other, but then one episode there was a drug dealer that came into town and the cops teamed up with the robbers, the bad guys and the cops teamed up to fight the drug dealer for that one episode. And you're just like, yeah, that's how fucked up those drug dealer is. The cops and the bad guys got up and they teamed up and they worked together.
The bad guys.
Now, the drug dealer was selling bad drugs. He was selling the kind of drugs that make people die. So.
Oh,
so,
no.
So, like, what I find most impressive about that statement, Dan.
Yes?
Is that you illustrated one of the most common plot cliches in media with one of the most obscure examples.
No one ever saw Cops?
No. Because
long arm, bulletproof.
I'm assuming it's real, but as far as I know, this is a fever dream you had.
Long arm had a grappling hook.
You dreamt this show.
Long arm had a grappling hook for a hand. He didn't have a hand. He had a grappling hook instead that could extend.
Okay. All right. Well, that...
You don't. Yeah.
That concludes our in-depth discussion of Star Trek Voyager's two-part The Killing Game.
Tomog.
Anti-fascist, anti-Nazi.
It's over. Let's go.
Sorry for any Nazis out there. We still want you to listen to us and buy our stuff.
No.
Sign up for the Patreon. We'll take Nazi money, but we are.
Please don't do this.
But beyond that, we're not into that.
Step away. Yeah. Or I'll kill you.
Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed that. Now, next week, we will be discussing Star Trek Deep Space Nine's sixth season episode, Inquisition.
The Inquisition.
We wanted to discuss that for a couple reasons. One, we recently discussed the Section 31 movie, and Inquisition is the introduction of Section 31 on Deep Space Nine.
Notorious for his cruelty.
It also offers some sort of interesting conversation starters around the morality and practicality of having a sort of a sinister agency that keeps things peaceful and stable in the Federation's utopia. So looking forward to talking about that. That's a good Bashir episode.
I just want to play this sound.
Oh, just a little tete-a-tete with a member of the Master Race.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah. Next week Inquisition.
You can't end this episode with a classic Neelix. This is when Neelix's personality came through as a Klingon.
There is no enemy as great as hunger.
We were talking earlier about how Klingon, Neelix was mostly just Klingon, but that's like a total Neelix thing.
Neelix likes to cook.
He loves that food.
Shitty food for people.
Yeah, right.
And make some shitty gross coffee.
Out of some kind of weed balls with goop mucus.
No, mostly. Didn't we decide it was mostly his own hair?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Or he takes the Jem'Hadar. They're the ones with the kelp hair, right?
No. That's the Kazon.
The Kazon. Sorry, not the Jem'Hadar. Jem'Hadar. Those are the lizard people. Right?
they're scaly things. Yeah.
That's a different quadrant.
All right. Different quadrant.
So Dan's definitely going to play some more sounds before we're all through. No doubt.
The place is crawling with crowds.
Is that bad to say?
I just got to get...
Is this the purity
of German blood.
Is this bad to say?
The place is crawling with crowds.
Should we not say that?
No, I mean, it's probably fine.
Okay.
Especially when you're talking about Nazis.
Yeah.
So next week, Inquisition, social media, @ItScottStarTrek, Blue Sky, Threads, all that business. Find us on Facebook. Find us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube if you wouldn't mind. You got
a problem with that system?
Listen to us there, but subscriptions are helpful. And hey, pop it on the TV while you're doing your laundry, ironing your clothes or something.
And remember, if you write a review, you'll get a haiku.
Oh yeah, that's right. Write a review and Dan will write you a haiku. You can go to patreon.com/ItScottStarTrek for some Patreon cleverness. And you can write to feedback@ItScottStarTrek.com if you have a question, comment, or complaint. And you can go to www.ItScottStarTrek.com just generally to check out our website. You can record a message there at ItScottStarTrek.com/record. You can do all sorts of shit. We're giving you all sorts of options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I thought Dan was going to play a sound there.
Punctured lung, arterial rupture, fracture of the 13th vertebra.
All right.
He needs
her legs. I'd be staring at her legs.
Okay. I played that out of order. I meant to play this one first.
They've been stabbed, shot, beaten, phasered, and bat-lift over the past 3 weeks.
Then I was going to play the other part where you said more injuries, but it's too late now.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks to the audience.
We'll talk to the audience around this time again next week. Bye-bye.
Tonight's performance is over. Return tomorrow.
I'm as dry as the crater at Tarfac. In the middle of the dry season. When it's dry!